Hello, fellow rebel capitalists. Hope you're well. In the news, the U.S. Commerce Secretary has come out and said that we need more central planning and more government spending if we are going to solve the problem with chip shortages. So let's get right into the article. Commerce Secretary says U.S. House needs to pass the CHIPS Act immediately to ease semiconductor shortage. Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo said the House needs to immediately pass legislation to support U.S. production of semiconductor chips. Really? So why don't we have enough semiconductor chips? Let's start by answering that question. The reason? Government distortions of our economy. Government intervention. Government regulation. Government restrictions. Bottom line is an intrusion into the system of free market capitalism that actually would have produced these semiconductors. You say, oh, George, well, they would have gone offshore. They would have done this and that. Maybe not. Maybe if we wouldn't have tried to price fix money, meaning interest rates, maybe we'd have that manufacturing right here in the United States. Maybe it would not have gone offshore. But regardless of whether it's onshore, offshore, do you really think that these companies don't want semiconductors? I mean, let's just say that there's a semiconductor company that's in Taiwan or wherever. Do you really think they don't want to provide them to the United States? And do you really think that the government can actually do something about it? See, how is the government going to actually solve this problem? And if they can solve it, why didn't they do it in the past? Why didn't Obama solve this problem? Or why didn't Trump? Why didn't Bush? If it's something the government can solve, what have they been doing? Are they just torturing us? Are they trying to put us into a vulnerable position? You see, this is when this whole argument just absolutely falls apart. She said the bill is critical to avoid future supply issues and lower the country's dependence of its parts from China. Okay, but is the bill actually critical? Or should we just lower restrictions? See, do you really think that if we had free market capitalism in the United States, we had very low levels of government regulation, intrusion, if we actually had normal interest rates, if we didn't have the central planners trying to micromanage everything, do you really think that this problem wouldn't be solved by entrepreneurs here? I mean, it's just, it's so frustrating that people actually buy this, that people believe that, oh my gosh, yes, we have a chip shortage and what we need is the government just to come in and save the day. I mean, we've got a problem of big government that needs to be solved by bigger government. The U.S. Innovation and Completion Act passed by the Senate with bipartisan support in June, but is stalled in the House. If we want to compete globally, we invest domestically. Who invests? I don't understand. So what Ms. Raimondo is saying is that if the United States wants to compete globally, we need bigger government. We need more government spending. We need government spending to be a larger percentage of GDP. Well, let's just take that to its logical conclusion. What if government spending was 100% of GDP? In other words, communist Russia. Would we be more competitive globally or less competitive? And then let's take it to the opposite extreme. Let's say we go back to prior to the Federal Reserve being created in 1912. Government spending was a whopping 3-5% of GDP, meaning that private sector economic output was responsible for, let's call it, 95% of domestic GDP. Do you think that economy was competing well at a global scale? You know, somehow, let's just think about this. Somehow, by the end of World War II, the United States had accumulated more gold than any country in the world. How? by the government coming in and you know, making it possible? No, by producing more than we consume. We produced more than we consume. The government didn't produce anything. The entrepreneurs, the private sector, was producing so much that we could export all of this surplus that we were creating. And if we export all of that surplus, what do we get in return? Gold. That's why we had all the gold at the end of 1944. Now, World War II did have a lot to do with that. But even prior to World War II, the United States was producing more than they consume, and they were receiving gold as payment. That was back when we were on a gold standard. So you had something called the price specie flow mechanism. That was a kind of a term that was created by David Hume, who was a very good friend of Adam Smith. And this is just the concept that when a country exports more, they get more gold, and therefore they have more money, and therefore they might see inflation. Then you have this equilibrium because the prices of what they have goes up, and then the prices of what that company that exported the gold, their prices go down because it's deflationary because they have the less money in the system. But the overall concept that's important for this story is that you had all the gold coming to the United States because we were producing more than we consume. That didn't have any, the government wasn't producing anything. The only thing the government can do is take capital from the private sector and reallocate it, as if the government can somehow reallocate those resources more efficiently than the private sector. And now we're at a point where government spending might be a little lower as a result of GDP, or as a percentage of GDP that was in 2020. But in 2020, it's almost 60%. 60. So what this gal is saying is that we just need that number to be 65 or 70%. And oh my gosh, your mind will just explode at how competitive the United States will be globally if the government would just spend more. If we just had bigger government, man, oh man, we'd really be taking those Chinese to task. You see what happens when you take these thought experiments to their logical conclusion? It just very quickly, you're able to dismantle the argument and really come to the conclusion that this is just pure propaganda and nonsense. And this really puts us on the road to serfdom. And it means that we have a lower standard of living, not a higher standard of living. And it also illustrates the point that whenever the government gets involved in something, whatever they try to do, usually the result is the opposite, regardless of their intention. The U.S. Innovation, oh, here we go. The U.S. Innovation and Competition Act. So, the irony here. So in order to increase innovation and competition, we need bigger government. How does that make any sense whatsoever?
This podcast is brought to you by Rebel Capitalist Pro, the best online investing research. I have teamed up with Chris McIntosh and Lynn Alden, two of the best in the business, to create Rebel Capitalist Pro and give you the tools you need to build wealth and thrive in this crazy world of economic insanity. Rebel Capitalist Pro is jam-packed with Chris and Lynn's incredible research. We have live stream Q&As where you can ask your questions directly to Chris, Lynn, and myself. And the best of all, there's an online member forum which allows you to network, learn, and explore ideas with like-minded individuals. What are you waiting for? Check out Rebel Capitalist Pro right now at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. Take action today and do something your future self will thank you for.
The Creating Helpful Incentives and Produce Semiconductors for America Act. Who comes up with these names? I mean, it honestly seems like we're in some sort of bizarre like dystopian nightmare where it's like you're in a bad dream and you just can't wake up. But this has to be a dream because reality could not be this ridiculous. That's kind of the world we live in right now. The creating helpful incentives. Listen, if we want to create helpful incentives, just reduce taxes for heaven's sakes. Reduce the size of government. Jeez, is this not obvious? I mean, come on. The CHIPS Act, which is tucked inside the broader competition bill, includes $52 billion for domestic semiconductor production. Okay, so again, let's think this through. We're living in a world, in a society where capital is starved for yield. Why? Because the central planners have put price controls on the price of money. Therefore, interest rates. Therefore, they have pushed investors so far out the risk curve that now you have investors buying Dogecoin, Shibu Inu, and NFTs. So my point there is I don't think at any point in U.S. history has capital been more starved for a return. So if there's not $52 billion of private investment going into domestic semiconductor production, that could lead you to only one conclusion. And that's that this will not be profitable. Therefore, it will not be sustainable unless we have constant government involvement in this, call it new industry. So basically what this is akin to the medicines and the boosters, where we're setting up this, with the to be quote unquote fully medicated, it's going to require for you to have a booster every 3 months, every 6 months, whatever they deem appropriate. Then you're going to have to carry around that pass on your phone so you can show your papers everywhere you go. And what does that mean? That government needs to have permanent intrusion in your private health. So this is the exact same thing, where they're coming in and they're giving $52 billion, which if it was sustainable, it would have been done easily by the private sector. But because we know it's not sustainable, then what is it going to require? It's going to require the government booster shot, if you will, of further involvement indefinitely into the future, which means that the government camel's nose is going under the tent, but you're never going to get rid of it. The government involvement is only going to become greater because you're getting involved in an industry that is not sustainable. So that means that the government spending as a percentage of GDP goes up, not down. And if government is in control of more spending in the overall economy, does that give them more power or less power? Rhetorical question. So then this gal says, increasing the domestic production of chips is critical as the automotive industry starts producing more electric vehicles. The Biden administration has given industry a sales target of half of new U.S. vehicles to be EV by 2030. And Raimondo called this an excellent goal. But the truth of the matter is it requires a lot of chips. The average EV has 2,000 chips, roughly double the number of chips in a non-electric car. So it's the exact same tone you see over and over and over again. It was the exact same tone that we illustrated in the very last video, whether it's with the medicines or whether it's with the chips. It's the same thing, that the government is trying to convince you that all they have to do is come in and spend money and that'll fix the problem. Or all they have to do is come in and give a forceful sales target to those stupid capitalists that if Joe Biden wouldn't give them a sales target, well, they'd be off just creating, you know, diesel trucks with no mufflers for the rest of eternity or something. I mean, it's just absolutely ridiculous. But it's this propaganda that is meant to try to convince the average Joe and Jane of how necessary the government is, when reality, they are the arsonist and trying to pretend to be the firefighter. And instead of pouring water on the fire to put it out, they're pouring gasoline on the fire. So then Raimondo said she remains bullish on the U.S. economy and American manufacturing. And this is where it just sums it up in a nice little bow of pure propaganda. Because anyone who says they're bullish on the U.S. economy, implying that it's structurally sound, or that they're bullish on American manufacturing, when our trade deficit has gone from $40 billion a month to $80 billion a month, is just not being honest with you, to say the least. All right, guys, there you have it. Welcome to 1984, and welcome to this push towards central planning that we obviously have to try to open up people's eyes to and really fight against. So enjoy the rest of your afternoon, but always remember that we've got to stand up for freedom, for liberty, and free market capitalism. See you in the next video.